You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And as a matter of fact, delighted to have you, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into. You need to know that you're not alone, believe me. There are folks in 95 countries that are out there listening right along with you right now, so you're in good company. Couple of quick things here. I had made an announcement, some of you remember that, about that we plan for 2009. To be able to get out and around the country and meet some of you personally, do some live shows from your location. And I said if you would be interested in being a volunteer coordinator for the event in your area, all you have to do is send me an email and I will send you the information. Well, we've received several. And I'll be responding to all of those at once tomorrow. I'll write one email and send it to all of you. But I just wanted to tell you that if you are interested in doing that, you need to send me an email right now and just say I'm interested in being a coordinator, or I want to help put this thing together for my area. The places that we're going to go to will depend on where people volunteer from. So you don't have to be from, Philadelphia, but that's fine. You don't have to be from Los Angeles or New York City. All those are fine, though. But you can be from, a small town somewhere, and that's okay with us. If you want to be the coordinator for your area to bring our show to your area, then you need to send me an email, and I'll send you the information that you're going to need to put it together, and it depends on you sending me the email first. Also, I really enjoy getting email from you. I enjoy the telephone calls we get during the show. I enjoy the email that you send, and I'm serious about that. This show, right from the very beginning, has been very, very audience-oriented. It's all about you. This is not about me and my agenda. This is about you and what you think and the things you're interested in, the questions that you have, and we try to get answers for those. Well, I'd like for you to have an opportunity to be even more involved in what we're doing. And one way to do that, you can help us by, if you've got a video camera, just making a very short, simple promo for this show that we can use on the air. Now, you might say, oh, I could never do that. Ah, come on. You know, Thanksgiving is tomorrow. You're going to be using that video camera, and people are going to get shots of you, too. You're used to being on camera. And we're only talking about a few seconds. And it doesn't have to be like professional, like it's done in a studio. We just want you to have the opportunity to be more involved. So if you're interested in that, send me an email and tell me that you're interested in helping with the promos. I will send you the instructions on what we're looking for and some suggestions on how to do what we're looking for. Both international airports in Thailand are closed right now due to protests. Remember when I was planning to lead a trip to Thailand, and it would have been right around this time of the year? And then we backed out of that. Aren't you glad I keep my fingers on the pulse of what's coming up? We'll be back right after this.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Don't be out of the loop. Sign up for the K-Files e-zine at kevinsmithshow.com.
Alien Seeker News.
Edge information.
On UFOs.
Ghosts.
Extraterrestrial visitation.
Bigfoot.
Anomalies on Mars.
And the moon.
And so much more. Read articles
from over 35 authors.
Reader stories.
Submit yours.
Audio archives.
The Kevin Smith Show.
Browse the forums.
All free to join.
AlienSeekerNews.com.
Ask yourself one question.
How in the world did I ever get along without it?
Prices for everything are going through the roof. And you're paying a lot more for gasoline now than you were paying at this time last year. Hi, friends. This is Kevin Smith with a real money-saving solution for you. We have assembled some of the top-name merchants in our online mall. Now, they offer real money-saving discounts on all kinds of products, from food and beverages to furniture, jewelry, cars, travel, vacations, computers, and more. Shop our KSS mall first and save. Put that gas money to use somewhere else. That's the KSS mall at kevinsmithshow.com.
Get K-Pods, the Kevin Smith Show podcast, and take Kevin with you everywhere. Subscribe today at kevinsmithshow.com.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is really someone I think you're going to find very, very interesting. Some of you have already become familiar with him. You've read some of his articles that have been published online. Some of you are familiar with him because you've read his work at his website online or his book. But we are pleased to have with us tonight, and I'm still working on trying to pronounce it correctly, and I just have to ask forgiveness in advance if I mess it up, but I think it's pronounced Stefan Wutani. Welcome to the show, Stefan.
Hey, Kevin, and thank you for having me on. It's a great pleasure being here.
You know, you're really an amazing individual to me. And the reason is because you're just sort of a wonderful mix of First Nations culture, modern culture, and even futuristic culture. Just sort of all blended together in a pretty coordinated way. How did you get to that point? How did that happen?
I think the first element would have to come from my father. My father is a fantastic individual, and I call him... I call him Dad, of course, but I also think of him as a sort of mystic. And when I was growing up in Saskatchewan and parts of Quebec, he would often take me out on the land, And while we were hunting or just walking out on the land, he would give me teachings pretty much all day long, actually, throughout my childhood. And that fostered whatever was in me that wanted to learn more, and I just never stopped. But I think it really did all start with my father and the culture.
Let me say for our listeners who are not in the United States and they're not in Canada, and they may not understand the terminology that I've used and that you and I are accustomed to. In Canada, the native peoples are referred to as First Nation. In the United States, we generally refer to them as Native Americans or American Indian. But that's what we're talking about when I said First Nation. We're talking about being part of those people who were here when the Europeans showed up. And I have the privilege of being a mixture as well, but my mixture is less metaphysical. Mine's more physical. I am part Cherokee and then Celtic and a few other things. But that's the terminology that we're talking about. That's what we mean when we use that terminology. You've written about the Great Pyramid, and you've written about it from a point of view that is, I think, unique. I don't think there's anyone else out there that has approached the Great Pyramid from the perspective that you have. And you've written about it in Dreaming the Pyramid. Tell us a little bit about that, and what is this unique perspective?
Well, in essence, Kevin, the Dreaming the Pyramid is basically the KISS formula applied to the Great Pyramid, looking at its design in the simplest possible manner and just seeing where you go from there. So without bias, of course, I have no training in archaeology or Egyptology, so I was a fresh prison to the whole thing. But the way that it all came about was in 1991 when the Gulf War broke out. And at that point, well, a lot of people actually, especially maybe young people, weren't sure whether or not this was going to go nuclear. And I figured, well, oh boy, I've never really done anything I really wanted to do. And I always wanted to go canoeing in the manner of my ancestors that helped the first voyageurs go across the land in the birch bark canoes for during the fur trade days. So I sold everything I had and left on a 4.5 month, pretty much a solo canoe trip across Canada that lasted for 2,400 miles. And for 1 month out of that trip, my father, my two younger brothers, and another brother came with me. So I had the presence with me for almost a full month. And right before that happened, before the canoe trip, I started, and I'm pretty much a normal guy, Kevin, in the sense that I like to think logically, or at least I like to think of myself as being logical for the most part.
Yeah.
But before that trip happened, I started hearing what I could only describe as impulses or voices. And they seemed to occur just as I was falling asleep or just when I was waking up out of the dream state in the morning. And that, along with feeling physical touches on my skin when nobody was around. Anyway, to summarize all for you, what happened was that on that canoe trip and the years after that, the voices, the impulses, the dreams all started making sense, and they started formulating a story, I would say. And what it is that it presents the Great Pyramid of Egypt, its design, as being us. There's no simpler way to put it. It's one of the main reasons that the Great Pyramid was built, I think, and I write about that, is that whoever designed it to represent a blueprint for us to become. So it represents us either as we once were, or as we're becoming, or perhaps even both. And the way that it represents us is through astrology, numerology, geology, biology, computer science, mathematics, pulling in from a wide variety of disciplines. And that's about
it. So you're saying that the Great Pyramid, is sort of a blueprint for what we're supposed to become.
God's on the earth.
God's on the earth.
Yep. God, I know that really sounds arrogant and pretentious to think of humanity as being God's, considering our behavior. But one really has to think about all the unique qualities and traits that we possess as humans in relation to the rest of the natural world. Not saying that we're better than them, but for instance, like, we're the only one engaged in space travel. And while it's true that plants and chimps have also been out into space, they're not really engaged. They're just involved in that because we involve them.
Mm-hmm.
We're the only ones that wear clothes. We smoke. We use electronics. On and on and on. And the further down we go, the more we become distinct from the rest of the natural world, although sociologists would say probably not in our behavior a lot of times. But in terms of our technology, I really do believe that rather than us evolving to a greater state of perfection in the future, I think we actually fell from a state of perfection in the past, struggled for a long time, and we're gradually relearning how to re-become who we were. If I had to put it all in a nutshell, that would be it.
All right. Now, I found an interesting concept on your website having to do with the 13th human. What's that about?
13th sign.
Yeah, the 13th sign, yeah. What is that about?
Well, basically, I'm not a religious person myself, but I do enjoy reading the Bible from time to time and various other sacred texts. And back in the day when all the dreams started pouring in regarding the pyramid and stuff, there were insights that came to me via different authors, and one of them was Linda Goodman. And in that book, she talked about how one of the reasons why Jesus would have traveled around with 12 other disciples is that each one of those disciples would have represented one astrological sign. And Jesus, being the 13th in that entourage, would have embodied the best qualities, and hopefully without any of the negative qualities that each sign has within himself, and thus becoming the 13th sign. And Jesus, in that sense, would have also been seen as being fully in touch with spirit, since all of the astrological chart would have been in him. So in other words, his teaching would have been extremely simple, just by example, just traveling around with 12 other people. So I think Jesus was far more of a mystic as well than what people, what the masses generally believe.
Now, I don't want to blindside you by asking you this question. That's not my intention, but I just wonder if you are familiar with the work of Ken Klein.
I'm afraid I never heard of him.
Okay. Ken Klein is a former NFL football player, and these days he runs a, pardon me, a film production, movie production company, and he put out a DVD called The Pillars of Enoch, or The Pillar of Enoch. It's about the Great Pyramid. One of the interesting things... Pardon me, the weather is changing here and my sinuses are giving me fits. One of the interesting things in that video that seems to sort of line up with what you just said about that 13th sign, he talks about the capstone on the pyramid, and he equates it to a scripture in the Bible that generally is accepted as it refers to Jesus. It's in the New Testament. And it says that he is the stone that the builders rejected. And there's no evidence of there ever being an actual capstone set on the top of the pyramid.
That's correct.
And there's evidence that that was the plan. But there's, you know, he says that they rejected that stone and it never got put up there, and that this was a sort of prophecy pointing toward Jesus. Well, I don't know, and I'm not getting into the theology of that, but then you're talking about the 13th sign, and in the on your website you have a picture that goes along with that, and it's a pyramid. And then the capstone on top of that pyramid has the number 13 above it. And so you've come to sort of the same conclusion that Ken Klein came to in his video. And I just wondered if you had seen his video or if you were familiar with his work. It's an excellent video that I recommend to anybody that's interested in ancient mysteries.
I'm definitely going to look that up. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and I believe the name of his company is Ken Klein Productions, I think. Now, there is, in Dreaming the Pyramid, there is also another picture on your website, and I'd like for you to kind of talk to us about this a little bit. What we have is a pyramid in the background. We have a drawing of a human with his head in his hands, and he's knelt down. And then there are a couple of drawings, one on each side of him. What's this about?
I'm just going to quickly surf to that so I can have a direct reference right away. But basically, it's just all the elements of the 8 or 9 pages concerning the human pyramid that are all put together on that first page. If you look on the left-hand side, and I'm not sure if your listeners can see that. Is that on your...
Yeah, we have internet TV as well as radio. They're looking at it.
Fantastic. Well, basically, if you look at the pyramid on the left, you see a physical pyramid that's topped by a floating or ethereal-looking capstone. And what I'm equating with that is... again, I'm not religious, but I do equate it with either God or spirit or consciousness, as how we were having our conversation last night. And the eye in that represents to me, again, the sixth sense, or the third eye. And when I say the sixth sense, what I mean is that I also believe that we are living in a sort of simulation, that this is not the real... It's reality, of course, according to our five senses, but there's another reality that's even more real than this one existing outside this one. And one of the reasons why we can't detect this realm for its fakeness, so to speak, with our five senses is because this realm gave birth to the five senses to begin with, so it has no way of looking outside of that. You can only perceive that through the so-called sixth sense that equates to the third eye. Now, if you look on the pyramid itself, on the left-hand side, you see a whole bunch of little symbols, and each one of those symbols represents an astrological sign, and again, equating each one of those signs with one of the 12 disciples that Jesus had. But I'd also like to make the distinction, Kevin, that when I refer to Jesus, I'm actually referring to Christ, because on a metaphysical and esoteric tradition, they say that Christ appears at the beginning and end of every astrological age that appears on the earth. So in other words, Jesus wasn't the first guy or person to come down here. Apparently there have been several at the beginning and end of every age, ushering the new age.
Okay.
So that's what I mean when I'm talking about Jesus. I'm actually talking about Christ as a title rather than a person.
Well, Christ actually is a title. A lot of people think that's his name. His name was Yeshua ben Yosef. That's his name. His title, the word Christ, is actually a Greek word, that Christos, that was used as a title. It's not a name at all.
I love how you studied theology. How long have you studied theology for? It sounds like your whole life there, Kevin.
I'm 55, so I've been exposed to this for 55 years. Yeah.
Right on. Gives me something to look forward to as I age, I guess.
All right, let's talk about on the right side of this pyramid. There's a drawing. You have a drawing on the left, a drawing on the right. The pyramid's in the middle at the back. The human has his head in his hands. But on the right, there is a picture that appears to show what is referred to as the chakras in a person's body.
Yeah.
How does that relate?
On a quantum level, we're essentially composed of light. So, in other words, if, like how we were talking last night, Kevin, if your leg gets cut off, you don't feel like any less of you. You're still yourself. You're still able to think clearly and everything else. So obviously we're not our bodies. So I believe that the true essence of ourselves is light. And if we came from light and we're living in light, then that light in a physical body would manifest in a way that would show its interaction with the physical world itself. And our physical world essentially is made up of crystals, because if you look everywhere in the earth, we have crystals in sand and snowflakes and water, under the ground, everywhere. So the earth could essentially be a giant crystal herself. And we, of course, contain crystals in our bodies, because our bodies contribute to the gradual and slow formation of crystals in the earth once we die and decompose. So light entering the physical body would be refracted, I guess, so to speak, into seven colors. Well, what we would perceive as seven colors, each one corresponding to various energy points along the body. So down below, although it's monotone on the picture there, but down below you would have the red, which would be the most forceful and primal and explosive type of energy, often equated with sexuality, but a lot of people equate that with the one right above it being orange, going into yellow, green, blue, getting into more spiritual or more consciousness related now, and then violet, and then the ultimate one at the very top, ultraviolet. So the chakras would be spirit's way, or consciousness's way of entering the body and letting it be known that its presence is known.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Sorry, go ahead.
There are wavelengths of light that we know for sure exist that no one has ever seen with their eyes. Ultraviolet is one of them. We can see them if we use instruments, but we can't see them with the naked eye. And yet, right around everyone listening to this show right now, around them is lots of ultraviolet light. The same thing with infrared. There's infrared light. We can't see it. Now, we have to take a break. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about how that relates to our perceptions of reality. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Stefan Wutany, and we are talking about his, what I think is a very interesting and unique perspective on the Great Pyramid, what it's all about, what its purpose was and is. And just before we went to break, I brought up the point that we know there are spectrums of light, or there are wavelengths of light in the spectrum that we cannot see with our naked eyes. We can use technology and detect and see that light, but we can't see it with our naked eye. And yet it's all around us. Each one of us, everyone listening to the show, right now, all around you, there is ultraviolet light. There's infrared light. You can't see it, but it's there. It's just as real as the light you can see. Now, when you talk, Stefan, about the fact that we essentially are light. Light is the source of us. And we're not our bodies. I agree with that. I agree. We are not our bodies. Quite obviously, if you cut your finger off, you're going to miss it. You wish you hadn't cut it off, but you're no less of a person for having cut your finger off. You're still you. Now, that means that whatever it is that we are is non-physical. And a lot of people say, well, of course, you know, you're a spirit. You're a spiritual being, and you're having a physical experience. Okay, I can buy that. Now, what is spirit? Well, that's where people start getting a little bit ambiguous. You're saying that it is essentially, it is light.
Yes, Yeah, I just also want to make the distinction here that my own personal conviction regarding spirit and what some would call the afterlife or anything like that, a lot of people think that we don't have a physical body over there. But let's put it into perspective here. Let's say that you're on the highway and you enter a vehicle. Okay, and another person enters a vehicle. And you had to how best to put this? Okay, if you look at a light bulb, what you see emanating light is the bulb itself. It's just glass. So that's our body right there. That's pretty much, it can take shape in whatever form it wants, you know, whatever we're born as. But the light is our true essence. And I really do believe that in the spirit world, or the light, so to speak, to put a label on it, that we do have physical bodies, but they're less restrained by limits than how we think of here. That we have physical bodies in that state, or in that realm or dimension, but that we have far greater fluidity with what we can do with them than in our current state here. And I think that's probably a good thing, too, because if a fall occurred and we're gradually relearning how to deal with those abilities and powers that we once had, supposedly had, then having the gem all at once might actually be detrimental to us. It's probably something that we're best getting back into at a slow and gradual rate.
Well,
I don't know if I answered that at all, but...
Yeah, well, no, you didn't, but it adds to the discussion. What my question is, whenever we talk about who are we, now, most people on this planet think of us, think of each other, in terms of our physical body. For instance, if you say, okay, who is Kevin Smith? Well, you know, he's a talk show host, so we talk about what we do. He's an old guy, and he's about 6 feet tall, and he weighs about 220 pounds. And so we start describing the physical when we start talking about who are we, and we think of ourselves in those terms. But what you're saying, or what you said earlier, is that we are essentially light. That's what creates who we are. The consciousness is essentially, at a quantum level, light. And that's what feeds into us who we are. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes. And it's even reflected within our language when we say things like... I had a bright idea, or she has stars in her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that popular song Jimmy Morrison, Come On Baby, Light My Fire, seeking illumination or enlightenment. We have so many sayings just within our vocabulary, within words, that they don't even hide it, but they tell us right out in the open that essentially we have far more to do with light, energy, electricity, power, on a quantum level than what we realize. And I think it's about time, you know, we've thought of ourselves so much as biological creatures, as just that, and the quantum and metaphysical aspects are only really coming to the forefront internationally in the last few decades, especially maybe since the 60s, that I think we're on the verge of entering a really, really transformative and powerful era in terms of human development and evolution.
Just a few years ago,
we are light.
Just a few years ago, if someone had said, you know, there is light out there all around you that you can't see, scientists would have laughed about it. Of course, these are the same guys that brought us the flat Earth. But they would have laughed at it. Now it's not only accepted, we know for sure it's true, that there's light you can't see. Whenever someone like you starts talking about these chakras that exist in the human body, and, you know, it goes through the entire light spectrum, there are people who just sort of instinctively, they will say, oh, that's nonsense. That's just hooey. But whenever you start really thinking about how we interact with the universe, you realize that it's not our bodies that are interacting with the universe. It's our bodies that we use as tools to interact. But then who are we? You know, what are we? And when you say that we are essentially light, that's what we are essentially, then it would seem to me to be rational and reasonable to say there are then parts of that light that we have not detected, that we very often are not in touch with. We don't see it with our naked eye, and our minds do not perceive that it is there. And yet it is as real as the light we do see. So there are parts of us, parts of who we are, with skills and abilities way beyond what we think we have, that we just are not aware of. We just haven't seen it, if you will. Would you agree with that, or am I off base there?
Oh, no, Kevin, I fully agree with that statement. And also, there are people, I remember reading about Edgar Cayce mentioning in one of his trance states that, or in his books, or somebody writing about him, I'm not sure what, but he said that we existed multidimensionally as well. So with that statement, it is possible, as you said, that we also exist in other realms and dimensions that perhaps we don't remember, consciously recall, know about, but exist in that state anyway. And this also brings forth the question of extraterrestrials and time traveling and all that whole bit. I'm not too big on the time traveling bit because I'm not too familiar with the concept of traveling forward in time. I think we can look back and so forth. But are the extraterrestrials maybe a facet of ourselves in time? Or do we exist in conjunction with extraterrestrials in another state? And also, if you look at the crop circles phenomenon in throughout the world, but especially in the Wiltshire and UK area, and a lot of people say that whenever they witness, or they're in fresh formations that have just been made, they witness little balls of light that are in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading about some doctor. Boy, I'm bad with names. I'm gonna have to look into that. But he said that he believed that those lights, those little lights that are often seen in close formation with crop formations, that he thought that they might actually be disembodied spirits or light beings themselves. So it really opens up a whole new area of exploration and discovery for us, you know. I think one of the normal reactions to this is to feel fear at first because it's really an unknown and surprising revelation to some, you know, if they're just coming fresh into this. But for people who already know it and have been thinking about it for some time, I guess not.
Well, for folks who are just beginning to listen to the Kevin Smith Show, you are just beginning to learn that we'll explore all kinds of ideas on this show. For some of you, some of those ideas are shocking, but for those who have been with me for a long time, there's nothing shocking about what I'm about to say. Stefan, you said that the pyramid, the Great Pyramid, is a blueprint. It's all about us. It's what it shows us through lots of numerology and geometry and all kinds of things, what it is we are supposed to become, which is, you said, gods on earth. Now, this may come as a shock to some people because, look, I don't intend or want to just shock people, but on the other hand, new information is shocking sometimes, and that's the way it is. So this may be new information for people. For a lot of our audience, are very religious people. And I don't scoff at that. I have a great appreciation for that, although I am not a religious person. But there are three places, Stefan, three places in the Bible that Christian people and Jewish, two places for the Jewish people, three places for Christians, the Bible they carry to church with them or to synagogue specifically states that we, you, me, and everyone listening to this show are gods. It specifically says it. One place is in Genesis.
I remember having that conversation last night.
Yeah. One place is in Genesis. If you go back and read the story about when Adam and Eve got kicked out of the garden, read why they got kicked out. I know that the churches teach it's because they sinned. I'm sorry, that's not what Genesis actually specifically says. You can just read it yourself and see that's not what it says. It says now the man has become one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that's the Lord God talking there in Genesis. He says, now the man has become one of us. And then in Psalm 82, it says that the Lord God stood in the congregation, in your English translation it says, stood in the congregation of the mighty. Sorry, that's just exactly wrong. It doesn't say that in the Hebrew. It says he stood in the congregation of the gods, and he said about us, they are all gods, but they'll die like men because of their injustice. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. I was saying when the break came, for folks that want to check it out. Now, look, I'm not getting into theology here. I'm not telling you what does all this mean to you theologically. That's not my business. But, you know, I can read. And in Psalm 82, it says the Lord God stood in the congregation of the gods. That's what it says in Hebrew. That's the original language. And he says about us, have I not said you are all Elohim? You are all gods. But you're going to die like men because of your injustice. And if I'm going to die like men, that means I'm not men. And if this stuff in the Bible is true, and I look, it's up to everybody to make their own decision about that. But if that's true, it says I'm not human. It says I am Elohim. And then the third place is in the Gospel of John in the New Testament. Jesus is about to get stoned by some religious leaders that are all upset with him. And he said, hang on, guys. I've done a lot of good works around here in my Father's name. Now, for which of these do you wish to kill me? And they said, well, it's not because of any of those good works. It's because you claim to be the Son of God. You make yourself to be a God. And he quoted from Psalm 82, and he said, now, look, if your own scripture says you are gods, why are you upset with me because I say I'm the Son of God? And they walked away. So, what you are saying, Stefan, is not off the rails. For people who are religious people, if they actually read their Bible and if they actually believe that it's telling the truth, they got to know if they read it, and of course most don't. Most of them have never cracked it open and actually read it. But if you read what it actually says, then what you're saying is right on track with that.
Yeah, and it also opens up the... It also opens up the implications of being gods. Like, what does that imply for us? Kevin, let's say, for instance, that the pyramid was designed to represent us in our perfect state. What could we achieve in our perfect state? If you look at our imperfect state as we are right now, and all the amazing, amazing things and technology and abilities that we possess and display right now in our imperfect state, Could you imagine what kind of creative force would be unleashed if we were suddenly to become reawakened and embrace that potential within us? I think it would be astounding upon the earth. Now, let's apply that to the past. If we were gods in the past, who's to say that we didn't actually play a part in helping to, and I have to put this, emphasize, co-create the realm in which we're living in right now? Because if the entity or the consciousness of the force of God that we say lives within us, if it lives within us and if it created the earth, and if we existed prior to being born in light form, then is it possible that we helped co-create along with that creative energy in the past and have just forgotten it? Now, what that would imply there is that maybe the earth that we're living in is a giant interactive simulation, pretty much like how it's described in the blockbuster movie The Matrix. And maybe we stepped into that realm, became enthralled in love, became addicted to its allure, its sensations that were new to us as earthbound spirits in bodies, so to speak.
So it would sort of be like, what you're describing would sort of be like on Star Trek, they have the holodeck, and they could go in there and program it to, all right, I want to visit the Wild West. And all of a sudden, the holodeck produces for them an Old West saloon, and they're standing in it. And what you're saying is, what if we stepped into the holodeck, liked it so much, we just decided to stay and did not return out of the holodeck to the reality from which we had come?
Yes, that's pretty much it. And that same ability is reflected every day in the works of... Well, look at what we do today now, Kevin. I mean, we have artists that create worlds within stories. We have artists that create worlds within books, movies, interactive video games. So many ways and methods that we co-create little worlds just for ourselves, and that we bring other people into those worlds with us. But what if we were to collectively coalesce and use those creative powers along with an inspired, I'm going to use the word God here, or the creator, or that creative energy. What if we were to co-create with that energy? I think we would be able to actually help manipulate physical matter in space and the cosmos and gradually help it coalesce into forming a realm in which we could step in. And maybe that's what occurred long ago. I'm not saying that's the truth, but it's an interpretation.
Well, what you're proposing, there are people who say that what we think has measurable effect upon matter around us. And in fact, there is a Japanese scientist, and I think his name is Emoto, and that may be wrong, but I think that's correct. He's done some experiments where they look at the crystalline nature of water, and water is liquid crystal, and they think really terrible things. And they watch the crystals in the water become ragged and chaotic and so forth. And then they think really nice, loving, beautiful things. And they watch as the crystalline structure of the water becomes organized and beautiful and spectacular. And it's just from the people doing the experiment thinking, but then they've actually been able to witness this and photograph it actually, proving that matter responds to what we think. Now, that being the case, that would seem to support what you're saying, but it also would seem to support that the more negative thinking that we do, which it seems like there's almost a tsunami of negative thinking and negative actions on the earth right now. And the more of that we do, it would seem that it would create or manipulate matter into a more ragged and chaotic state. And maybe we are the cause. Maybe our negative thinking collectively, maybe we are the cause of the tremendous disasters that seem to be happening with more frequency.
I think we have far greater influence and reach over the Earth's affairs than what we realize, Kevin, even as individuals. Like you said, collectively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yes.
So maybe a lot of what's happening is directly related to sort of the mass psychosis that seems to have infected the Earth.
And at this point, what comes naturally around the corner is its nemesis, the return of anti-chaos. What brings back order? Some people would look to the return of a savior or a messiah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I do confess to believing that to a degree. However, I also believe that it would be extremely dangerous for one single person to be singled out as that person with those abilities. In this day and age, especially where worldwide communication is instant and you have things to think about such as corporate sponsorships and backstabbings and blackmail and sabotage and the whole bit. And so what I think is that if there is going to be a return of some sort of order, a Christ consciousness, so to speak, that it will be a consciousness, that it will be a gradually reemergence of a... Basically, we'll remember how to save ourselves. We're going to grow up, I think, and we're going to reclaim, hopefully before it's too late, because we're on a headlong journey towards a disaster on the current course that we're headed in. But hopefully at some point we'll turn it around, if we wake up in time. And again, the journey is individual. To my people, Kevin, we don't really have a word for God. What we say is Gichimanitu, which essentially translates to the great mystery. And philosophically speaking, we don't really have a need to label the infinite or the unknowable, because it's unknowable and it's infinite. So we would rather give it a sort of great mysterious name like that and just relate with the natural world around us and just acknowledge that that exists as well. So really, an interpretation of, in brackets, God is really up to the individual in my culture, much more so than in most organized religions.
Well, here again, that's certainly not off the rails with things that are in that are written in the Bible. Most people, when I say, look, man, listen, I got to tell you, Stefan, when I do this, every once in a while I do. When I do this, I get lots of hot email. We have to take a break, and I'll do it when we come back. Okay, Stefan, I'm going to take the plunge here.
Oh, boy.
In the Christian scriptures, which is, of course, the Hebrew scriptures plus the New Testament, there's the Gospel of John. And the first 18 verses, all the Christian theologians refer to that as the Proto-Evangelion. And they say that the entire Gospel... it's the first gospel, Proto-Evangelion, and it's all encapsulated there. And it makes absolutely no sense when you read it in the English translations. Parts of it make no sense. In English, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." In Greek, which is the original language, it says, "In archaean halagos, kai halagos en proston theon." So the word that is translated into English as word is logos, in arche en halagos. And the translation is simply this: in ancients was the logos, and the logos was with God, and the logos was God. All right?
Yep.
Now, in Greek, there is
another word that means word, and it's the one that you use most commonly. It's rhema. So you ask yourself, what is this about? In the beginning was the word. That makes no sense. So you do some study to find out, what did the Greeks understand when they said logos? Now, what they understood was the smallest, purest, most intense unit of communication of creative thought. We would translate that in modern English as consciousness. So in the beginning was the consciousness. The consciousness was with God. The consciousness was God. The same was in the beginning with God. Now in that Proto-Evangelion, it goes on to say this, and the word, the logos, became flesh and dwelt among us. Okay?
Referring to Jesus.
It's referring to Jesus, but what it's telling you there is the consciousness became flesh and dwelt among us. And the question then is, why? Well, the next phrase says, and we beheld his glory. Now, when you say that, most people think of shining light. I think that's an interesting visual image that we have, because that's not what the word glory means. The word glory it's been translated as glory, but the Greek word is doxa, D-O-X-A. And doxa are the weights that the merchants would use in the marketplace. And they'd put some, you're going to buy some vegetables, and they put it on the scale. And then they, on the other side of the scale, they start putting weights on it to find, they keep adding weights to see how much to charge you. Well, the weights that...
Egyptian symbolism coming on.
Yeah, the weights that they add are called doxa. So we beheld his weight. Now, doxa also means, you can translate it as value, because the more weight they put on, the more money they charged you. So weight and value became equivalent. So we beheld his value.
I see where you're going, yeah.
So his value as the consciousness who has come to live with us in flesh, his value, according to the rest of that verse, is as of the only begotten Son of God. Okay. Now, again, I'm not going to get theological. That's not interpretation. That's just translation. And anyone that thinks I'm off base there can go do your own study and figure out what those Greek words are and what those Greek words mean, because it was originally written in Greek. It wasn't written in English. All right, now, that being the case, the picture that I get from that is what it's saying is that the consciousness had a job to do, which is to, which was to come here and make intelligible to us the consciousness.
Yep.
Okay. Meaning then that on our own, there are light spectrums we can't see, and someone had to tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, whether people believe that, or, and I'm not saying they should, I'm just doing some translation, but what I'm saying is that what you're saying is not off base with what that says.
I enjoy that that other viewpoint that you have on there in regards to that translation, Kevin, because actually you're the first person that I've talked with that that has shared that with me in that sense. It gives me another perspective to look on things.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think for a lot of people who have, and there are tons of them, who have been raised in church and they've heard all the stuff that the church taught them, and they grew up and they walked away from it, and they walked away from it because a lot of it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense because what they were being told isn't what is actually written in there. And if you look at what's actually written in there,
My Lord, it's metaphysical from start to finish.
Kevin, just out of curiosity, if you don't mind me asking, how much of the King James Bible version has remained true to the original Hebrew version?
Oh, a whole lot of it. A lot of it.
Okay.
But
I was wondering about if it had changed radically from that.
No. But there are key parts where it is changed, because those, if they had actually translated it the way that they should translate it, in other words, just translate it, if they had actually done that, it would have shot gigantic holes in church theology.
And we know where that would have led.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, the translators at the time of the King James, had they shot holes in it, you know, if they'd just translated it, and it shot big holes in the church theology, they would have been beheaded.
Yeah, it would have shot holes through them.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, most of what church... Look, there is church theology, and then there is what does the Bible actually say. Now, whether people should believe the Bible, again, you know, some people believe the Quran, some people believe the Bible. That's a whole different issue. What you should believe or shouldn't believe, I mean, that's a whole different issue. But what does it actually say? You know, when you compare what it says to what they have been teaching for centuries, they're worlds apart. And
yeah.
You know, what you're saying about us being beings of light, and that we sort of have gotten lost in the maze, in the matrix, and that we're beginning to wake up out of that. All of that is right on track with what is actually written in that very ancient book called the Bible. I don't know if you knew that.
Sorry?
I said, I don't know if you were aware of that, but you're not off base with what's actually written.
Well, I've always been more of an ideas person rather than details, but it's nice. It's really nice to... boy, Kevin, if you don't mind, I'm going to continue corresponding with you from this point on, because there are some things in the future that I need to bounce off of you just in order to gain additional perspectives on.
Sure, that's fine. I have people who listen to the show that... Now I can tell you right now, I'm going to get two or three emails from people who are going to say, I've been listening to your show now for 3 years, but after what you said when you had Stefan on the show, I'm never going to listen to you again. And I'm sorry for them, because I didn't write that book. I didn't write that book.
I get a lot of angry, and I read emails anyway, but I have a habit of deleting emails from my server as well, and actually I had to take the guest book off of my site because it was just filled with spam and people who were saying some pretty nasty things there, in my opinion. So not constructive criticism, but just outright insults.
Yeah, but now, I also...
I have to...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have to say that prior to all this happening to me and this awakening, I would say, Kevin, taking place, and I'm not the only one undergoing this awakening. There are millions of people around the world undergoing that same awakening. But prior to that, I was just a normal guy going to the bar, lifting weights, chasing women, drinking beer, going hunting, fishing, swearing, you know, doing all the manly guy things that country boys are supposed to do. And to me, all this talk about chakras and consciousness, and to tell you the honest truth, I just put it up there with loonies. Like, it did not interest me at all. Up until the age of around 20, 21. That's when the first dreams and the voices started coming in. So I can understand how someone might have issues with what we're discussing tonight. But it also places, we have to look at our species and our current state of evolution for what it is, because in comparison to the natural world, Kevin, as I'm sure you're already aware, if you took a deer 50,000 years ago and you compare that with a deer today, it's pretty much the same animal. It breathes, it eats, it flatulates, it eats grass, twigs, sleeps around, and pretty much, you know, aside for a few things in looks, maybe in size, nothing much changes. But if you take a human being the one we call Homo sapiens, and hopefully into the next version, what's soon to come after this, we have changed to the point where each generation is almost no longer able to relate with the one after it. For instance, just take the world of music, for instance. Although a lot of styles are coming back, for the most part, what people today are listening to is today's youth. Well, every generation has issues with the music that the youth of that time period listens to, or the reading material that they're exposed to, or the type of style of dress that they wear, or the ideas that they express. So humanity itself is on a constant journey of evolution, progression, expanding its boundaries, tearing apart its limits, and we're not even really fully evolved yet as a species. Imagine in the future, at this current rate, if nothing happens to bring us to annihilation, which I hope really doesn't. We have a lot of really beautiful things to offer the universe, I think. If at our current rate of evolution and development, I think we're going to become fantastically powerful as beings. And the trials and tribulations that we're undergoing now as a species will serve us in the future as reminders of who we were in the past, and will hopefully avoid bringing our garbage into other realms and systems as we progress out into space. And we'll find that we have become the extraterrestrials ourselves. Boy, that was long-winded, but I'm glad I got that out.
I think we are extraterrestrials. And I think that we are only beginning now to rediscover that fact. I think we originated elsewhere. Now, I don't mean that we as a race actually physically lived on another planet, but I think that there is, and I've presented the evidence for this on this show multiple times, there's evidence in our DNA that we're not from here. There's been some DNA intervention. And so, part of why we seem to have so much difficulty on this planet, I think, is because, well, we are strangers in a strange land.
To put it bluntly.
Let's open up the telephone lines. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or if you have a comment, please feel free to call in with it, and we'll be glad to put you on the air and let you ask your question or make your comment. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Okay, Kevin, what's on your mind?
Stefan, I wanted to know, have you ever read anything from Zechariah Sitchin? Have you ever read his works about how humanity was actually, at one time, humans were somewhat as a slaves as animals to extraterrestrial visitors on this planet, and that one group of them decided that, you know what, they allowed us to have consciousness, that they allowed us to have awareness, and we just grew from there. What do you think of that?
All right, Stefan, the question, by the way, Kevin, for some reason tonight you're way down in the bottom of the barrel again, but Stefan, the question is, have you read any of Zechariah Sitchin's work, and what do you think, if you have, what do you think of his theory that we were created by extraterrestrials, and that at one point there was a group of us that said, hey, you know what, they've allowed us to have this consciousness and to think, and, you know, we're kind of going to do things on our own, and we kind of rebelled against them. So what do you think about that?
It's interesting because during my journey, I would say probably about 16 years ago, when I first came across Zechariah Sitchin's work, I didn't actually...
Yeah, you, Stefan, I don't know what's happened, but your audio now is very muffled.
Oh, okay. Would you like me to phone back?
Yeah, no, you're okay now.
Oh, that's strange.
Yeah. So you were saying...
I've never read Zechariah's work. However, in bookstores where I did find his work, I originally, some number of years ago, I remember picking up a few of his books, but I never actually read them aside for just flipping through the pages. However, from listening to the description that your caller described there regarding his theories, I've pretty much come to my own similar conclusions on that, but mine are based upon what I read from the Casey readings, in that a long time ago, there was a group of beings or slash spirits that decided to co-create, but that these spirits were more inexperienced, unwise, rather immature, and that they co-created a world in order to step into in the future. That they co-created a world that would flourish under their direction, and that at some point in time, they decided to they themselves step into that world by infiltrating the bodies of the plants and the animals inhabiting that world. And thus, when they first felt physical sensations, and we can go into like eating, drinking, sleeping, sexuality, they later became addicted to that. And then it was a second group of spirits, so again, us in spirit form, that said, wait a second, let's go back down there and try to teach that first group how to re-evolve and remember who they are. And I'm not sure that whether that means we're going to be letting go permanently of our physical bodies. I don't hope so, because I think we have a lot to offer even in our current physical state. But it does appear that there seems to be some sort of a cosmic war going on between two groups of entities, between spirits, I would say, or between angels, just as it's described in various parts of the Bible.
Why do you say that there appears to be this cosmic war? What makes you say that it appears there's a cosmic war?
For instance, Kevin, just because a person is spiritual, it doesn't automatically mean that they're good-hearted. There are a lot of very highly, highly spiritual and knowledgeable people on the earth that do bad things. And that purposely do bad things as well. They know that they're doing bad things. And I'm talking, of course, about people who might use various forms of mental manipulation of people to make them do things that they don't want them to do, to coerce them, to blackmail them. So just being spiritual or just being part of the light doesn't automatically mean that that person is good. So just as that polarity of, in brackets, good and bad exists here on Earth, I also believe that that journey continues in other dimensions, and possibly even into the extraterrestrial world. Although I would say that just like how it is here on Earth, I would say that most people are basically, unless they're forced through circumstances otherwise, that they're basically on the gooder side of things, on the better side of things.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
How are we doing? I was wondering, I've been finding out here lately, just like the Bible says, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can say to a mountain, go jump in the lake or whatever. And I'm beginning to believe that our conscious minds, the big secret is that we are very powerful beings, and if we would all get on the same page, we could literally change time in our destiny. I just wanted to see what he has to say about that.
Okay, what do you think about that, Stefan?
Absolutely. Any creative effort that takes place in the earth is usually a team effort. Even a solo, even a writer who writes a book, generally does not. You can seclude yourself to write the book, but you'll generally take ideas that you hear from others and work upon and improve those ideas to incorporate into your work. Anything of a creative nature takes more than one person to create.
Okay. Now, let's take what he said. He quoted a verse from the Bible where it says, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, then you can say to this mountain, be removed, and it will remove to the sea. It'll go. Now, that's a very clear statement that there is within us the ability to do things that we, if you take it literally, there is within us the ability to do things that I think most of us would say were pretty godlike.
Yeah, in our regards to, like, I'm not a quantum physicist or anything like that, of course, but in our regards to manipulating physical matter from a non-physical state of being ourselves, Probably. I have not witnessed that physically myself. However, I will say this. I have witnessed elders in the far north on hunting and fishing trips where the weather was absolutely atrocious. And those elders would just go out and talk to the land. Like, they would just talk to the sky, and they would go off by themselves, and I'd observe them. And not just a few minutes later, but seconds later, that storm would subside. And on my own canoe trip, and I have my own brother as a witness to this, because this was just an amazing part. We were canoeing on, where were we? We were just coming out of the Paw in Manitoba and coming onto the North Saskatchewan River. And everybody was warning us that it would rain buckets and it would be dangerous, but we decided to go anyway, being young and dumb, you know. Anyways, we're all in the middle of the lake, and all of a sudden it started pouring, a downpour so thick, Kevin, that you could almost not even see in front of the canoe, 10, 20 feet. It was that thick. And I was in a really big despair because I was with my brother, and I thought to myself, if he dies because of me, boy, this is going to be terrible. You know, I sort of went into like a mini trance, and not even knowing what I was doing, I guess I prayed. And not too long after that, just again, seconds later, the entire 20 to 30 foot area around the entire canoe, only a few drops of that area received any rain. And outside of that area was a perimeter of hard downpour, and it continued on for almost a good 10 to 20 minutes until we reached shore, and then we were able to get shore and get our tents up. So that's one example that I've lived through that tells me that essentially either it's another aspect of myself that I don't know about or something interacting with me.
All right, I hate to interrupt. We have to take a break. We'll continue with this when we come back. Hold that train of thought. And we'll continue with your calls when we come back. Also, the flash message feature is open if you're outside of the United States or outside of Canada. If you're anywhere else and you want to send us a flash message, just click the link on my site. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Stefan Wutuni, and I had to pause and think because I mispronounced it earlier, and I asked you before the show how to pronounce it. I almost said it the wrong way again. It's Wutuni, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's, if you put your hand on your knee and you say Wutuni, and you put a hard emphasis on the T, that's it. Wutuni.
Wutuni. Okay.
Yep.
All right, Wutuni.
It means young spotted eagle tail feather in Cree.
It means what?
Our original last name used to be Kehia Wutuni, which means, in Plains Cree, means young spotted eagle tail feather.
Okay. Well, my name means kind and courageous wagon wheel maker.
Cool.
That's truly what it means. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Okay, Kevin from Northern Alberta. What's on your mind?
Well, I like what your guest has to offer us tonight. As people, I believe that we are more than what we're taught by religion or even by school, in school. The reality is probably deep down within all of us. The trouble is with so much commercialism and materialism around us, it's hard to see the forest through the trees sometimes. And you know, in order to tap into this, we almost need to be taught how to do that as well.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that we are just rediscovering. Some aspects of who we are that are beyond what we thought we were. And I think you bring out a good point, and that is, okay, now, you know, we're beginning to understand that, but how do you tap into it? Is that what you're saying?
Sure. How do you tap into it in this vast wilderness we live in?
All right. Stefan, how do we tap into the parts of who we are that we didn't know existed and that we're beginning to discover or rediscover?
Well, answering that seems to be pretty easy. It's the desire, Kevin. You have to really want it. And for most people, it's unfortunate, but it seems to be the case that the only way a lot of people come to want something of that nature is that they find themselves in a crisis. And as we know, the world today is fast becoming an international world crisis in so many areas that it's going to force the masses, I think, to start asking really deep questions about our place and role here on Earth and also within the universe. But also at the same time, we have to remember that the journey of asking questions and coming to one's personal answers as to who we are and as to who you are. Because, for instance, I can't tell Kevin in Northern Alberta who he is, but I have an opinion of who we are. But only he can answer who he is and what his role is. So it's a coming together of your own personal fulfillment that can be only achieved through you and desire. If you really want it and you're willing to work for it, it comes through you, but it can't be forced onto other people. Enlightenment can't be forced onto other people. Some people have tried, and when you try to do that, it becomes religion, as opposed to a personal journey. I guess that's my response on that.
All right, Kevin, does that answer your dilemma there?
Yeah, that was quite excellent. Thank you. I believe that the world needs a good kick in the ass about now. Maybe this is the time. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks for the call. Yeah.
That lowers the family rating of the show there a little bit.
All right, now everyone has to approach this in whatever way works for them. And having said that, I know I'm going to have people who will say, now, wait a minute, Smith. You're always saying that reality is reality and that whatever is, is. And I often say this, just because you believe something is true and you believe it sincerely, deeply, and strongly does not make it true. That is all still true. That's all still the case. I haven't changed anything. But when you apply it to what we're talking about, see, I would say that there are parts of us, parts of who we are, that we have not been aware of, and we are rediscovering those. And whether someone believes that exists or doesn't makes no difference as to whether it actually exists. It does exist, and what is, is. And so I still apply the same basic philosophy that everyone's heard me say forever. It applies to this. If it's real, it's real. And even if you believe it's not real, that doesn't stop it from being real. It stops you from accessing it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if what we're talking about is fiction, no matter how strongly Stefan believes it, if it really is fiction, it always will be fiction. And so, you know, the idea that what is applies here as well as to any other subject we talk about on this show. And, you know, I guess I've become famous on this show for not being a big proponent of the value of belief. I'm a big proponent for the value of thinking and the value of consciousness. And then whatever is, is. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don. Come from Phoenix.
Okay, Don, I'm going to have to ask you to speak directly into your telephone because you're at the bottom of a deep, deep barrel this evening.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah, I would I'd like to make a comment and expand on a little bit what Stefan has said to Kevin. I think Kevin from Alberta.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about how we can, I caught the gist of it, asking how we can find ourselves, and I look at it as looking inward to ourselves, and we got to explore ourselves by looking
now, and we're taught that anything beyond this, well, we don't deal with that until after we die and we meet our Maker. But we need to learn that we have a spiritual side to us here and now, and if we learn to look inward and explore that spiritual side, we begin to discover more answers.
All right, Don, what do you mean when you say spiritual?
Well, just what you're talking about tonight, our true identity, our true selves, who we really are. We're not this physical flesh and blood being, but, the flesh and blood being is just a housing to who we are, and we kind of forgotten that. We look at ourselves as being something physical, but we're never taught, so we've forgotten that we are more of a spiritual being.
All right. Stefan, were you able to hear that?
I sure was. I caught it all.
Yeah. What do you think about it?
Well, I'm sorry. What's the name of the caller?
Don.
Sam?
It's Don.
Don. Don, I agree with you 100%. It has to be a journey inward, and also one of the greatest phrases in Latin is, and Kevin, you can corroborate this or correct me if I'm wrong, tenusque ipsum. Hello?
Yeah, I was just waiting for you to continue.
Oh, to not get some, basically, know thyself. We come from the universe, so therefore the universe is also contained a little bit within us. So if we go within, we'll know everything that's without. But, as you said, Kevin, reality affects everyone equally in this physical body. So I think also, in a sense, we're each other's teachers and students at the same time, and we're kind of leapfrogging each other in our evolution. Where I wanted to go with this was that where we go from here is probably going to be a collective journey, and we're just going to continue helping each other out the best way we can. When you really look at the physical world in terms of how Don was saying our physical bodies there, it really is, we really got the short end of the stick. Look at the brain itself. Scientists say that the brain isn't even fully formed until the late teens, and it starts degrading by the mid-50s. Later for some people, depending on how they exercise that muscle. So that really only gives us, in an average 80-year lifespan, only about 30 years of clear thinking, which is kind of ridiculous. So we're obviously something other than purely our bodies, and consciousness comes into the area. So, yeah, Don, I really fully agree with you, and looking inward is exactly what I did on the canoe trip. Like, I wanted to go out into nature. That's why I sold all my things and I took off canoeing, because I wanted to commune with nature, basically. I know it sounds cliche and stereotypical, but that's exactly what happened.
Well, I want to pick up on something that you just said, and that is that reality relates to all of us equally in the physical, but I think it also does in the spiritual. Now, it does in this way. Let's say that you and I we're both hungry, and we both go into a restaurant and we each order a steak. And so they bring us these steaks. These steaks have come from the same cow. This is the same beef, okay? When I eat this steak, my body is going to take from that food what it needs. And that food has a great deal more in it than what my body needs. But my body is going to extract what it requires. You, when you eat your steak, your body is going to extract what it requires. And those are different. But the reality of the steak is the same. The potential nutrition in each steak was exactly the same. But you got what you needed, and I got what I needed. And I think when we are talking about relating to this universal consciousness, we're talking about relating to discovering those areas of light, if you will, that we didn't know existed, but we're beginning to discover that they do exist. We, each of us
is going to get from that what we need. But the reality is all equal.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Which they referred to as the construct.
Yeah, does it make sense?
Absolutely. Basically the same gist as that of an operating program of a computer. The program and the construct is the same. It's just how you reassemble the binary code and run it through the compiler that creates the experience that you're seeking.
Mm-hmm. Well, the experience we're seeking right at this moment is we're into a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. More of your calls when we come back. Right, we are back, and we are on final approach, meaning, of course, we have only a few minutes left in this show. If you're going to call, you need to call now, because if you wait till I've got 2 minutes left and then you call, we don't have time for you to say what you're going to say and then for either one of us to respond to it. So if you're going to call, now's the time. Telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. Stefan, we were talking, you know, I had used that example about steak. Any food will do. For vegetarians, broccoli. Any food will do there. But I think that, you know, the idea that a lot of people have is that there are many, many roads, and they all lead the same place. And that, I think, is nonsense. I really do. I know where Interstate 10 goes. On one end, we go to Los Angeles. On the other end, you know, you go down through Houston and then over through New Orleans, and you continue all the way over to Florida. And I know where that road goes. It doesn't go the same place as Interstate 35. And the same thing is true as we start looking at who are we and our relationship to the universe. There are a lot of different roads. And some of the roads that people take spin them in circles, and they never get to the point where they have any answers. I think what you're talking about and what your book talks about, I think it provides a pretty accurate roadmap for discovering who we are, a very accurate roadmap. And I think that as we rediscover who we are, we're going to understand a whole lot of the phenomena that we talk about on this show. We talk about ghosts, spirits. We talk about UFOs. We talk about extraterrestrial intelligent life. And I think a whole lot of that phenomena becomes intelligible as we start understanding who we are.
Yes.
If we, you know, if you think yourself to be an elephant, you can try all you want to be the best elephant there is, and you're never going to make it. And you'll never understand why everyone else is looking at you askance.
Especially if you're trying to pick up peanuts.
Well, yeah, with your nose.
Yeah.
So
we're given free will for a reason, Kevin, and free will, when exerted without any guidance or without any morals or philosophy, just runs amok, and it creates chaos. And that chaos can have devastating effect upon the natural world, which we're witnessing. You know, we have an economy that's based upon basically old world style pillaging and plunging without regards to sustainability or renewal. So that has to change, and the economy will change in the future to reflect that, I think. We'll be forced into it. I know we're coming on to the final approach here, but I would just like to say that I never once believed that I solved the riddle of the pyramids. There have been some people that have implied that in previous interviews, but I never once believed that. What I believe is that this is just a small, small taste of the kind of common knowledge that we all share that's going to arise as this awakening takes forth, and that it has started awakening forth in various people's statements before. My gift, my ability is simply, I think it's like a little bit like you, Kevin. I'm able to take pieces of the puzzle that already exist and kind of weave them together so that it kind of simplifies and makes sense for people and kind of reestablishes links between things that they didn't think were related, say between different religions or philosophies or metaphysical elements.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we have a caller on hold and we're running out of time. If you don't mind, let's take this call so that we'll have maybe enough time to respond to it.
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, Kevin, this is George from Jersey.
All right. Tell me your first name again.
George.
George. What's on your mind, George?
Okay, I just have a quick question. It's an interesting perspective, and I was wondering if what Stefan's take is as we work our way up the levels of awareness that we each may come to realize that we are actually more than one being on this planet at the same time in space.
Interesting thought. George, thank you for the call. Are you a first-time caller?
No, this is about my third time, Kevin.
Okay. And we're going to let you take the answer off the air here because we're just about out of time. What do you think about that, Stefan?
Could you just quickly summarize that again for me, Kevin?
Yeah. As we work our way up in levels of awareness, what do you think about the possibility that some of us may realize that we are actually more than one being? Like, I may be actually more than one being here on this planet right now.
The next step, it's going to sound pretty weird, but we're going to remember that we're saviors. We're essentially Christs in amnesic form. Once we fully take on that consciousness and that awareness that we're essentially Christs, that's when it'll all kick in. I think that's what it's talking about when it talks about the return of Christ. I don't think we're talking about that person might come back. I'm not saying that he or she or it won't, but the greater awakening, the greater return will happen within our own selves. And once that takes place, a whole new paradigm will open up because there's no way that we can act as we once did with that new awareness, because thought creates action, and with new thinking, new actions in the future.
Once again, you're right on track with what is written in the New Testament. Because there's a place in the New Testament that talks about the return of Jesus. And it says, it does not yet appear what we shall be, but we know when we see him, we'll be as he is.
Oh, okay.
So that tracks right along with what's already written, but many, many people don't read what's written. And so they hear us say these things, they say, "Wow, it goes against everything I ever heard." Okay, time to hear something new, then, isn't it? When people say, "Well, that goes against everything I ever heard," you know what I normally say, Stefan? There was a time before you ever kissed a girl, but you learned how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a time before you ever heard this, but now you've heard it. And you can learn it. And, you know, it opens up whole new vistas of thinking. Stefan, I want you to stay on the line with me, but thank you for being with me this evening. It has been really mind-expanding, and I just thoroughly have enjoyed this interview.
So have I, Kevin. I've had a great time on your show, and you just say the word, and I'll be back.
Outstanding. Folks, if you look right beside Stefan's picture on my website, kevinsmithshow.com, you'll see a link that will take you to his website. And just click it. It'll take you over there to his website. It's his website has a lot of stuff on it, lots of good information, and I recommend that you do go over there and take a look at it and read the information that's there. If you heard something this evening that upset you, I want to hear from you. If you heard something this evening that you liked, I want to hear from you. just use our contact page at kevinsmithshow.com. If you send me an email without using the contact page, chances are I'll never see it because of our spam filters. But if you use that contact page, it'll get through, and I will see it. This show is about you. It's not about me. It's not about the guest. It's about you. And so I truly enjoy hearing from you, and I invite you to use the contact page and let me know. Also, let me know if you want to help us out with some of those promos or if you want to be a coordinator in your area to bring this show live to your area. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody. And for those of you in the United States, happy Thanksgiving tomorrow.